produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 443. What did they do next? Part 16A, Steve Howe.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 443 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along a bit later on. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week we return to our ever-popular What Did They Do Next series, and it's time to work out what Steve Howe did after the end of the Union tour. It's an opportunity for Mark and me to discover more music we don't know very well, and a chance to compare 1993 solo work with Love Is, which we spoke to Steve about last week. Around the webs this week, and starting with Facebook, Joshua Rupert posted in the Yes Fan Club group about the blending of his librarian job with his Yes fandom. As he puts it, he felt it was his duty to make a new display at Sahara West Library. The results are rather fine, at least for us 5%ers. There is to be a John Anderson Thousand Hands live stream experience on Sunday, August the 2nd, 2020, at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. PST, I'm never quite sure what that means, and 8 p.m. GMT. Here's the blurb. The event will feature live performances of songs from 1,000 Hands, along with an in-depth conversation with John about the process of creating the album. If you have a question for John, you can leave it in the comments, along with the city in which you reside, for your chance to have your name and question mentioned in this exclusive interview with John. I don't live in a city. Watch this space for more details on where you can tune in for the event, it says. More to come very soon. Uncle Preston Frazier has reached Don't Take No for an Answer from Fly From Here Return Trip in his review series, which he likes, but is not quite as keen on Steve Howe's vocals. A bit of a theme emerging around that. As pointed out by Daniel Crone, John Davison has been doing a little bit of ranks breaking by stating that the band have half an album already written, despite what Steve Howe might have hinted at last week on this show. John also talks about the side project, Arc of Life, which he's been working on with Billy Sherwood and Jay Shellen. So that could be interesting. Dave Fagan points out Alan White's post mentioning he is celebrating 48 years with Yes this week, and in the visitor post, Doug Curran added his copy of the Morse Portnoy George project, Cover to Cover, which opens with a great version of No Opportunity Necessary, No Experience Needed, which has also been mentioned on Twitter by Jeffrey Mason. And Jeffrey and Simon Barrow also shared the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp adverts, which tell us that Steve Howe, Alan White and Jeff Downes are all doing interactive online masterclasses this year, and Mark Lang got in touch about prog rock and Yes being questions on the BBC quiz show Pointless once again. Mark has also been coming up with interesting playlists to include Rick Wakeman's Red Planet. Very good stuff. David Brick suggested an interview with old friend of the YMP Tom Brislin about the new Kansas album. That's definitely something we should consider. And Mike DeBell suggested a twopence about Yes album covers. So many thanks indeed to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including the commenters on the last couple of show notes, Simon Barrow, Stephen Lamb, Doug Curran, John Thompson, Jeremy North, and Paul Maynard.
This is Miguel Falcón at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Established in 2011, this is Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
I'm here with Mark now. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Oh, not doing too badly. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. Enjoying the day.
Excellent. Okay, so keeping the theme on Steve Howe, as we spoke to the man himself last week, very enjoyable that was indeed, and yes. I think he actually mentioned this album that we're going to look at this week, which is from what he calls the Relativity Years, but we'll come back to that in a minute, because I want to talk about the end of Union. Now, we've already focused on Bill Bruford for the end of the Union tour and the end of that lineup of the band, the eight-man lineup of the band. And at the end of that Union tour, Steve Howe, Bill Bruford and Rick Wakeman all ended up not continuing as Yes. And I've got an interesting little passage to read from Chris Welch's book, which is called Close to the Edge, The Story of Yes. And I don't know if I knew about this previously, but certainly this has reminded me. So this is Chris Welch quoting Steve Howe himself. By 1992, the Union tour, a fading memory, Rick Wakeman, Bill Bruford and Steve Howe were no longer members of Yes, despite hopes in certain quarters that they would stay in situ. So here's Steve Howe. I dreamed up a very plausible plan, said Steve, where we would continue working as eight people. There are four guys who basically write the material and need to collaborate to get the arranging done. I suggested those four get together to get the music sorted. Arista were right behind this and said, don't try to play together all the time. Bring in guests and just have fun with each other. That was the idea I projected, and nobody liked it. Well, the Los Angeles department didn't like it, and then John said that the three of us weren't needed. He could see no way forward for us unless he got on with something. So Bill, Rick, and I took a back seat. And then he sort of partly repeats himself. He says, after Union, there was a time when there were eight people in the group and nobody knew who was permanently in the band and whether we were going to stay together. Then I got a call saying, well, it's going to be this way. It meant that Yes was going to carry on and do the Talk album without Rick, Bill and I. So I could see the sense in that. There was going to be big battles about who did what, but Roy Lott, who at the time was head of Arista along with Clive Davis, had a terrific idea. He said, well, guys, don't play together all the time. Do tracks that feature different people. And that's what I wanted to do, actually, on the tour. I didn't want us to play together all the time and make the music go two places at once, but to try and feature two different lineups. But that never happened because people like to be on stage and they don't want to leave. So you couldn't possibly get anyone off the stage. Yes, has had people join and leave in such a variety of fashions it's impossible to describe, but certainly they are curious and unusual. Rick, Bill and I were disappointed because we had sacrificed ABWH for Yes, and at the end of it came out without Yes and without ABWH. So he went off to do different things. So what do you think about that idea then, Mark? The idea that you could create live shows and also studio albums with a variety of different combinations of the eight players who were in Yes at the time.
Well, I mean, on paper, it's a fantastic idea. In logic, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, you're dealing with eight egos and egos that are very large. I mean, could you imagine coming up to Rick Wakeman and telling him, okay, you're going to have to sit this one out and Tony Kaye's going to play keyboards. He'd probably start laughing. Like, what are you talking about? I should be on here all the time. And then it'll be like, well, then I should be up there all the time. And then yeah. I should be up there. You know what I mean? It would just be one of these things where it's like, well, why should I sit this one out? Am I not important? You know what I mean? It would just be too many overblown heads on stage for that to happen.
Yes, indeed. And that's certainly what happened, wasn't it? That they all stayed on stage pretty much the whole time, apart from little bits like solos and the drum duet and those sorts of things during that tour. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice, though, if that was possible? And you could have a Union 2 back in those days, in 93, which really did have both bands playing together and not being, well, some people would say, hijacked by producers and others who came in and played the parts instead of the eight members of the band, as it were. But anyway, none of that happened. ABWH didn't exist and Steve didn't remain. So what did he do? Well, from his autobiography, All My Yesterdays, he tells us that 1992 and 1993 was extremely busy for him. Of course, he had the Union tour and all that, but he was also very, very active with Asia, rehearsing with Asia in London in the spring of 92. And then after actually leaving, the first thing he did, I've found out, is not the album we're going to be talking about, but actually he produced a record called Artistry by Martin Taylor. Now, Martin Taylor is a guitarist who I'm afraid I had never heard of before, but since finding out about this, I've looked him up and listened to that Artistry album, or at least some of it, and it really is remarkable. And clearly Steve Howe really enjoyed that. But I don't feel too bad about leaving that out. It was the next thing that Steve did, literally. But apart from producing, he wasn't on that album at all. It was a solo guitar record, so I don't feel too bad about missing that out. And so he was off to play with Asia in Worcester in May, etc., etc. But he was also working at the same time on his next studio solo album at AdVision, and also at his own studio, and also in Switzerland. So he was this album that we're going to talk about today was actually recorded in all sorts of places, different studios. And his son, at this point, he was recording his son, Dylan, on the tracks. And interestingly, he says his years of experience, that's Dylan, had given him confidence, and he was really ready to take it on. And he would return to the recording of the grand scheme of things, which is what we're going to talk about soon, but in a different country, Switzerland.
All right.
So, this was during, as I say, the relativity years, as Steve refers to it. He produced two albums on the Relativity label. So, Turbulence first, and then The Grand Scheme of Things. What do you know about those two albums?
Very little, mainly because during that time, 1992, 1993, I was really neck deep in two bands at that time. Mm-hmm. Guns N' Roses, who had come out with the Use Your Illusions album during that time, and a very, very world-dominating Metallica, which had released the Black Album at that time.
Okay, yeah.
And were under 3 year, three years at that point, but onto almost 5 years consecutive long tour, if you can believe that. It was unbelievable how long they toured that album. I was very much in that. But I find it interesting, though, that I wasn't more aware of it, mainly because I was also very much interested in Relativity Records, because it had a lot of those kind of guitar playing virtuosos on there,
right?
Which is probably one of the reasons why they did sign up Steve Howe, because, you know, any way you look at it, whether he's not a, you know, shredder, but he's definitely a virtuosic guitar player, right?
Yes.
So he fits on that label any way you look at it, right? So I'm kind of surprised I didn't know more about those records, but being aware of them now more in my later years, I'm really enjoying some of these things. I mean, I'm not too familiar with Turbulence, and I really don't know very much about this album, which makes it even more exciting for me, because now we're going to be going into it, you know, head on, and I'm going to have a really good chance to approach it fresh, with fresh ears, which is very rare for me.
Yeah. It's interesting that Relativity, they were taken over, bought by Sony Entertainment, and ended up producing rap records for a time, and now they're just completely defunct, unfortunately, because they did seem to have some really good artists, obviously like Steve Howe, as we've just said. And certainly, according to Guitar9.com, this album, The Grand Scheme of Things, is a must-have for Howe fans and worth a listen for instrumental fans who don't mind a number of vocal tracks. So I hope that's not a backhanded comment about Steve's vocals again. Mm. But interestingly, this album did reach number 15 in the Billboard Top New Age Albums charts. So that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, New Age over in this country generally has a fairly interesting reputation for being somewhat, mad and a bit arty and hippie and all that kind of thing, yes. But interesting that it managed to do very, very well, really, in that chart. And I've got a copy of this album. So I've got a copy of what's called The Relativity Years, as I keep going on about, and that includes the two albums, two discs in this set, Turbulence and The Grand Scheme of Things, released by Gonzo Multimedia, who have also produced all sorts of different Yes things over the years, haven't they? And the problem is with this that the sleeve notes to this are almost completely absent. So, for example, this album is credited to all tracks composed and performed by Steve Howe. Now, that's just nonsense, because there are all sorts of people on this. So it sounds as if it's going to be a solo record, yeah, with Steve just playing his guitar and singing over the top. But that's not right at all, is it? Have you got a copy of this yourself?
I do not have a copy of this, but obviously I will be getting one, you know, through the proper sources like Discogs. I will be ordering one for myself. Mm. But obviously I can go on to Spotify as well. I think they might have it on there. And I know YouTube has a full copy, yeah, of it now, just for reference sake. But I mean, I am shocked that, you know, a label like Relativity would go and do such a slapdash version of these notes for him, because I mean, it's played like vocals, guitar, acoustic guitar, electric, steel, pedal steel, bass, mandolin, kodo, flute, keyboards. But you know, there's also other people on here too. Nick, yeah, Beggs did bass and stick work. Dylan Howe did drums. Virgil Howe, yes, you know, played keyboards and piano. You know, I mean, if I was Steve Howe, I'd be very disappointed about this, because, you know, he has family playing on here and they're not even mentioned.
Well, absolutely right. And also Keith West, who I think he, mm-hmm, mentioned in our chat last week, who was the, yes, vocalist with him in the In Crowd, and then it turned into Tomorrow right back at the beginning of his career. So, yes, singing harmony vocals and also playing the harmonica. And something... And Anna Palm on violin, yes, and vocals, so I'd be interested to hear that. And also fascinating with all the people doing engineering and so on, but Michael Jeffries is credited as engineer and cabasa. Quite why he was playing additional percussion, I don't know. That'd be fascinating to ask Steve. But, mm, yeah, so and also the packaging, the... It has a very interesting... Obviously, the grand scheme of things is a kind of huge universal title, isn't it? And the cover art has got Steve playing his electric guitar kind of in the middle of the universe. So there's star clusters and all sorts of things around him. And I was very interested to see that Roger Dean is mentioned doing artwork and design, but actually the logo and the, mm, photography and the cover art was all by Martin Dean. So Roger's brother, who also worked on the stage sets for Yes back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, so very interesting that. And so we haven't got Steve's beautiful Roger Dean logo of his name. It's actually slightly different. But it looks really quite attractive, I think. But interesting to see Martin and Roger working on this.
Yeah, I found the album cover quite... Let me put it to you this way. I found it kind of shocking in one way, because it almost looks like to me like they took a picture of Steve Howe,
yeah,
cut it out, and placed it on top of this spatial image. I mean, it looks very un-Roger Dean-like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so I don't know if that's because it's the influence of his brother on it or what it is. It'd be interesting to, again, to ask Steve the story behind that. And I am interested that on the latest album, Love Is, that we spoke to him about last week, and on this one and quite a few other of his solo albums, he's moved totally away from Roger Dean on the cover art. His first solo albums, of course, were absolutely wonderful Roger Dean works of art. So interesting that he's moved away from that, but yet he remains, of course, a huge friend of Roger Dean and very much intimately associated with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm wondering if maybe because of the fact that the whole thing that happened with Yes and how I'm guessing maybe Roger stuck with, you know, John Anderson and, mm-hmm, you know, Yes proper. Maybe he just felt like he just didn't want to be bothered using them because of that, you know, sour grapes sort of thing.
Oh, well, maybe. And the next album to appear from Yes, of course, was Talk, which didn't have a Roger Dean cover either.
True.
So that was Peter Max, wasn't it? Yeah. So just before we leave this then for this week and come back to the actual music next week, 16 tracks. It's a long album. It's 58 minutes. It's almost an hour of material here. Lots and lots of songs, instrumental pieces. Quite a few of them short, and some of them, in fact, very, very short. So several of them, the sort of standard 7-inch single type length, 3.5 minutes, a bit more than that, one of 5 minutes and over. But Luck of the Draw, for example, 1 minute 40 seconds. So interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Another thing that I found interesting is that there is one song that immediately caught my eye, which was George's theme, which I remember him playing, you know, years later during his solo piece, right?
Yeah.
So it is obviously a material that he's still fond of years later. But, you know, just because you're associated with a band that does, you know, 20-minute songs like no problem doesn't mean that you have to do them on your solo records, you know. maybe it's a breath of fresh air for him to do a minute 40 song, you know, like he only has to come up with one decent part.
Yes.
How refreshing is that, you know?
Yes, well, you can do whatever you want, can't you, when it's your record. And also fascinating to see that one of the songs not written just by Steve himself has a credit to his wife, Janet, on it. And one or two others. So Keith West and Virgil Howe also wrote some bits and pieces. So it's a fascinating prospect to listen to this, especially just after listening to Love Is and enjoying that so much. So really looking forward to that. If you listening know this album really well, then let us know what you think of it. And put those comments, if you want, on the show notes for this week's episode. For the moment, though, Mark, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulrein and Mark Anthony Kay.
Just before we go, here's the patron update, or at least half of it. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And half of those Yes Music Podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, Dave Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian N.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. As I always say, continue thanks to Robert and David. So, thank you very much indeed to those patrons. If you want to join in and help keep the lights on here at YMP Towers, then just head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast for all the details. Alternatively, you can click on the link from the Yes Music Podcast website. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening again. We do hope to be back next week with a very interesting interview indeed, so you do have an extra week to listen to the grand scheme of things. In the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.